everybody. Welcome to The Kelly O Show. I'm your host, Kelly Alexa. This show is dedicated to inspiring women of all ages to pursue excellence in mind, body, and business. After decades of playing small in my own life and staying in the comfort zone, a couple of years of massive chaos and drama in my personal and my professional life forever changed me for the better. Through some tough lessons, I evolved, and I became a stronger and more confident version of myself, fearless, and finally, unapologetically myself. I am now designing my life bigger and better than ever before, and most importantly, I'm designing a life on my terms that is full of joy and happiness. And I think that this is something that's been missing for so many women. They're either staying in the comfort zone like I was, or they've got a life that looks pretty good on the outside, but it's missing real joy and health and happiness. And that is no bueno. I believe that the future is female, and every week this show is going to bring you incredible interviews and live shows that I hope is going to motivate you to take massive action in your life, to leave the comfort zone and go all in, again, to pursue achieving excellence in mind, body, and in business. I hope you enjoy the show, and let's dive in. Welcome back. This is part two of the two-part interview with Beth Santos. If you haven't listened to part one, please go back and listen to that because the rest of this episode will make a lot more sense when you listen to part one first.
I love how you talked about the events in that you're like, well, let's just do it. And we really didn't know what we were doing. I can tell, every time I tell the story about starting Fitfluential, I literally had no idea what I was doing. And it happened so fast. Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a business plan. I didn't have any investors. I didn't have any money. The first three people that worked for me, we didn't pay ourselves until we got our first six-figure client. The way that I hired people, and those are all, it's I kind of joke about it now, but they're good lessons because now I can use those lessons and go, hey, you know what? When you're hiring people and you're a people pleaser, not that I'm conquering my people pleaser nature now, but women in business, if you're a people pleaser, you need to address it in a big way because it can be such a huge liability. Yeah. And we're going to get to one of those topics in just a second here. But, you know, like one of the things I learned was when you're hiring people, if you're a people pleaser, you can meet people who you have a previous relationship with and you're not, what's the word I'm looking for? Discerning enough. You're not looking at their resume. You're not saying, let me see your resume. Let me talk about your experience. Let me talk to you like I'm the boss and I'm going to be writing your paycheck. Yes. That's what I did. And I made huge mistakes. I mean, the truth is I probably, knowing what I know now, there's very few people that worked for me that I would ever hire again. And that's just the cold, hard truth. So you learn those lessons, but one of the things that we talked about that I actually saw you post about today on Facebook, and I asked Beth before we started talking, I said, so this is kind of branching into women in business and passing on some lessons learned for those of you thinking about it. Before I asked that question, though, I realized I didn't finish one of my thoughts, which is very typical of me.
Get it.
But you made a point about, you know, hey, we just did these local events and we just went with it. And what I love is that's what I think to me is the definition of a successful entrepreneur. You're going to try things that will fail miserably. Yeah. I've had many ideas that I'm like, this is going to be awesome. It was one of them was Fitfluential Finds. I'm like, I love reading magazines. And when they have, you know, Oprah's favorite things or this, that, I thought it'd be a huge success. I thought, you know, the gift guides would be a huge success. I tried to revisit and we did it and it was like crickets, you know, and you have to realize like those times have passed. So you're not everything's going to win, but I believe the true entrepreneurial spirit are people who go, you know what? We should get together, do things that have never been done. And if you have an idea and a gut feeling and you're passionate about something like Beth was, do it because that little get together can turn into anything. For me, I started Fitfluential thinking it was going to be a little club of people, and it ended up being an influencer network. At the end of 10,000 people reaching 350 million into consumers a month, we'd done 700 successful campaigns. We were a profitable seven-figure business. If you think I thought that's what I would do, when I started that company, I didn't even call it a company. I called it, I thought it was a little club thing I would do on the side. I thought I was going to have to get a job at Starbucks. That's the truth.
But that's
also another topic about women aiming low. So back to the Facebook post that Beth put up today. And this, ladies, is something that, you know, I'm very passionate about, not only encouraging women to pursue entrepreneurialism or a side hustle or moving their way up and breaking glass ceilings at work, being an advocate for yourself. But this topic that Beth posted is very common. And really it had something to do with the lessons that you've learned about rewarding yourself or paying yourself. What can you just summarize what you put up there?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Absolutely. And to respond to your comment on failure too, it's funny because my least favorite question that people ask me and when I speak at things or, you know, in podcasts or whatever, is like, tell us about a failure, because I'm literally like, we have so many failures. I don't even remember them anymore. Like, that's what I want for you. I want you to fail so many times that you literally cannot even think of one time in particular, because it is such a regular part of your day. You know, not working.
And then you don't think of it as that big of a deal.
Right. Exactly. And I think that's the really powerful thing, because we just try stuff all the time and we're just seeing if it works. And if it doesn't work, I don't even like calling it a failure, because if it doesn't work, it's just a thing that didn't work and you're doing the other stuff that does. And maybe that thing comes back a couple of years later in a different form because it just wasn't the right time for it. Or, you know, so it's like, there's not a whole lot of just kind of complete hard failures where you can take nothing and no lesson out of it.
Can I interrupt you and ask you a question there? Because I think this is a really key differentiator between men and women. I think men, and there's data behind this too, you know, that men don't have imposter syndrome. Men are okay, you know, when they're applying for jobs that they're not eligible for or that they don't have the experience, where women are like, oh, I don't meet all these requirements, I'm not going to apply. And I think in the case of failure, men will minimize failure, women will magnify it. So did you always have that attitude of like, hey, this is a learning experience, or did it take a while for you to get there?
I mean, I think, I don't know if I was so molecular about it. I think, you know, every day I think I question, you know, is this business working? And I have said out loud, and I say this because, you know, I know other people have thought this way about themselves too, in terms of imposter syndrome. I have said out loud to people, you know, I truly believe if somebody else were running this business, they would do a better job than me. And like, knowing that I have said those words makes me realize that, you know, we all, and I have that imposter syndrome, and it's not necessarily on a, you know, per case by case basis. It's this constant, like, have I made the right choices to lead to where I am today? And by the way, I don't believe that about myself anymore, but I think it's, you know, part of being an entrepreneur is the blessing and the curse of the fact that everything that has happened to your business has happened because of you, you know, like, 'cause you're the one that created it. And so for better or worse, even if it's not, I mean, somebody really smart said once that it all has to do with hiring. It's all hiring problems. If something isn't working, it's because you did not communicate to the person running it correctly how it should work. You know, like, it's all about you managing and hiring correctly. And it all comes down to that. And so I think, So I think that in that way, it's, you know, it's something that is this part of the life of an entrepreneur, of constantly evaluating your business. And so I think I look at it at a much bigger level, but yes, it's always there.
Well, all of these things are, I mean, these could be podcast episodes in and of themselves. I mean, they really are. I mean, because I think so, there's so many women, and this is why I love interviews like this. So many women will have an idea and they think, I need to go to business school. I need to get my master's. Yeah. I need to have this much experience. And the truth is, you know, I interviewed the CEO of Globiotics, a skincare company that I use. And I interviewed her actually for my sales course for women. So that's a private interview. But one of the things she talked about is, you know, she was promoted from CMO to CEO. And she's like, Kelly, every day somebody will come to me and ask me a question and I have no idea what the answer is because I've never been CEO. And it's one thing to start your own entrepreneurial venture and be CEO, right? You founded the company, you're the CEO or the COO, whatever you call yourself, but to to be the CEO where you've worked your way up, and suddenly you go from you're just part of the team to the top dog. And she's like, I just figure it out. And she had such a great attitude. But I share that with everybody listening because, you know, that's part of the growth is everything is, doesn't Marie Forleo have a book out called Everything is Figure Outable, which is just the most truest saying ever.
So you had pointed out some studies, and I'll also give you another study. There have been studies that have shown that the more educated women are, the more self-conscious they become, like the less confident they become. And I could not see that any more truly. I mean, you know, just even looking at myself, I have a Kellogg MBA. Kellogg is one of the top five business schools in the country. And yet it's like, I do not have any confidence in my business skills. And I just look at that. And I think it's because it's one of those things, the more you know, the less you know. You know, the more you know, the more you realize there's so much more to know that you're not an expert in. And it can be overwhelming. And I think, and I also wanted to comment on the Facebook post too, because I know we've been like going in different directions, but let me give you the quick and clean version of this Facebook chat, because so I posted in Facebook and I've started doing this. You know, Facebook is my space. And I think as an entrepreneur, I use Facebook a lot, and my husband makes fun of me for it all the time, which is totally, you know, worthy, because I think as you see, when you're an entrepreneur, you also have to live in your social media space a little bit. It's all really just helping cultivate that community and that brand. But also I enjoy it. I find it to be a great place to connect with old friends and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But I posted on Facebook the other day, because I kind of had an epiphany, that started a few months ago and has been just kind of growing even more. And the basic, concept of this, it starts with a theory that I read about, that I cannot for the life of me, I have to look it up because I've cited it far too many times. But there's this theory in essentially gender studies about how we talk to our girls and how we raise our girls. And, you know, thinking about fairy tales and thinking about Disney, we're very familiar with, you know, the damsel in distress kind of, you know, expectation that we're putting on our girls. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is, in many fairy tales and in many Disney movies and in many, you know, of those kinds of things for our young girls, there is a figure of a fairy godmother. And her purpose in these stories is that she saves in some way, the protagonist who is a good person, you know, a good person with a good heart, who's trying to do the right thing, who's, you know, trying to make ethical choices, who's a hard worker, who's, you know, who we want to win. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that happens in hearing these stories over and over again is that we come to learn that, you know, through these, that if we're good and if we focus on ourselves and if we're true to ourselves and if we're good people and we work hard, then someday an opportunity will come to us. You know, somebody will go out of their way and help us. There will be a fairy godmother. All you have to do is focus on yourself and just do the work and do it well. And I've started to realize that that's actually not true, that there are many fairy godmothers in the world, but there are no fairy godmothers who are just going to completely at random go, who do I want to help out today? You, I'm going to go and help you. You know, you have to ask for that help. And there are so many people who want to offer it to you, but you have to ask. And so there's a level of self-advocacy that we're not giving that we're not teaching our girls. And, and that level of self-advocacy means, you know, even though you may be succeeding at something, you're not going to get what you deserve if you don't tell people and show people what you're succeeding at. And that actually directly relates to money. And so I came to this realization, you know, our business has been growing. I felt very fortunate. I live in the city of Boston. I was recently awarded one of the Boston 50 on Fire for 2019, which is like a really cool honor to receive. I've been, you know, the business has been growing. We've been bringing on all sorts of really great new clients. Like, they're having all these opportunities. And then I looked at my own growth and realize that I am not paying myself. You know, I'm still paying myself as if this were an early burgeoning startup and I'm eating ramen every day, essentially. and I realized for a moment that back to the point of everything that happens in your business has to do with you. this is related to that as well, that, you know, the success of my business is limited by my own personal success. And if I can't step into a place of recognizing and communicating my own value, then I'm not only devaluing my company, but I'm devaluing the people who work for me. And by the way, I run a conference that's all about helping women step in places of value as they build their own businesses. And if I can't do that for myself and actually, you know, pay myself what I deserve to be paid, you know, assert myself to potential clients and that kind of thing, then not only am I, you know, not setting it a good example, but I'm actually passing up an opportunity to take a step forward on behalf of everyone. You know, when I decide, oh, I'm just going to do that thing for free because I feel bad, I don't want to, you know, ask them for money or whatever, that is losing the opportunity for somebody to speak up, which then is going to help the next person to speak up. And it really kind of hit me that it's not just about, you know, doing a disservice to myself, but it's actually negatively impacting all of the people that I thought I was helping. So that's kind of the gist of it. And I think it was really powerful to me, I think, because I tend to be very much a pleaser, like you were saying. I have a super hard time, you know, being very critical when I'm hiring people. And I do not like confrontations. And I do not, you know, if somebody asks me to do something, 9 times out of 10, I'll just do it. And I have to stop doing that. And I think recognizing that in yourself will, you know, that's the first step in me coming to a place of asserting that, because if I'm not asking for these things, how can I possibly expect other women to ask for them? And don't I know that that's the thing that they should be doing? So
this, everything you just said, I was like over here just nodding and like wanted to clap, because it's so true. And I say it because I've been there. And I know, you know, this is why, I mean, heavy plug, I'm going to just put it out there. I mean, this is why I created an entire course for women to help them. I really need to rebrand it, because I keep saying, so it's called The Opposite of Nice Isn't Nasty, Sales Training for Women Who Know That They Can. I'm in the process of changing the tagline, because I don't want it to be sales training. Sales training is so limiting. And I actually had two people ask me about it today, and they're like, well, I'm really not in business, but I have these issues that you talk about. I'm a people pleaser. I'm a doormat in my personal life. Mm-hmm. I've been taken advantage of. And she said, would the course help me? I'm like, oh my God, these concepts for women are universal. Yeah. And what I can tell every woman out there is it's a process. I believe it's an ongoing process, like most habits and lifestyle changes, to get from being a people pleaser who allows everyone to, or a lot of people, to manipulate you don't stand up for yourself, you're not advocating for yourself, you're letting you kind of lead that martyr life, you know. Mm-hmm. And I did it in my business. Everyone that worked for me took vacations. I didn't take vacations. Everybody would take days off. I didn't take days off. I was just telling my mom this the other day. I go, remember when in 2016, I had an ear infection so bad, and I kept working and working and working.
Yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. I had a hole in my ear. Yeah. Remember, because that's when we went to Corning. I had a hole in my eardrum. Mm-hmm. And I kept working. And you know what I would do? I would go to my president at the time, and I'm like, oh, and I called him crying, and I'm like, oh my God, I just, you know, I gotta lay down. And like so I take responsibility for this. I created a culture where the people that worked for me, when I would come crying to them and go, I've got to take a break, I can't sell today, they'd go, will you be back tomorrow? Because they were all like, Kelly can't stop selling. If Kelly stops selling, our gravy train, and I'm being facetious, but you know, like, and I never put my foot down in hiring, in firing, in all of these decisions. And just like you said, because of that, I set an example for the people that work for me. Yep. I was teaching them what a leader is not. I set an example, you know, so those are all things we absolutely have to stand up for ourselves. We absolutely have to define that we're worth it. It's a process, because it took me a while when it's kind of like, maybe in a completely different way, you know, an alcoholic has to recognize they have a problem. We have to recognize, wow, I'm a people pleaser. One of the best books for me to recommend to all of you, it's called What Color Is Your Personality by Carol Rittberger. I'll link it up in the show notes. that was the first book. It has extensive tests or quizzes that really showed me what a people pleaser was, how much of it I was, and how it was affecting me in my professional life, in my personal life, and everywhere. And if when you first realize that, and then you start making the process, you go from, you'll start to go, oh, I could never be that person. That's bitchy. That's ambitious. That's greedy. Yeah. And then you slowly start to see that's not greedy. That's not bitchy. That's a strong, powerful, confident, assertive woman who's doing things in the world. And you can't make everybody pleased with you. You can't make everybody happy with you. And when you get over that, it's so freeing. It's so freeing. Yeah. And I was so glad to see that post because when you get to that place, you know, and just you putting that post up, that's going to teach a lot of women. So I commend you for that.
Thank you. Well, and by the way, and I completely understand, you know, the need for changing the way your course is and, you know, not calling it sales and that sort of thing. But I have been on like a quest to redeem the word sales because so many women in our community recoil when they hear that word. They're like, oh, sales, you know, that means like I've got this jacket, you know, and on the inside there's like all these used watches that I'm trying to sell or whatever. But that's not, I mean, sales, and I will tell people, and I actually, I spoke at a university and I said, you know, one of the top skills I think that people should have if they want to succeed in running a business, or really in life actually, is sales. And the professor that was standing next to me, she was like, well, you don't mean that, right? You mean like influence. And I was like, oh no, I mean sales. And because we always, we have such a negative connotation with it, but actually this is what sales is. Sales is listening. Sales is, you know, understanding the value that you have and being able to communicate that value in a compelling way. And whether you can do that through good hiring, through talking with the media, through selling a product or service to your audience, through building a connection, like these are all things, people who have phone skills who can just talk to somebody and get things, you know, and get things out of them. And I don't necessarily mean money, but I mean having people open up to them. Those are some of the strongest skills that anybody can have in any career. Amen. And so I'm kind of like on this whole, like, let's reclaim, and you know, granted, of course, first you got to get people into the room in order to get them to reclaim the word. So like totally do your rebrand. But I think it's really fascinating that there is a negative connotation to that word. And yet I actually think it's one of the most powerful things that you can do for your career.
It's so ironic because here I am bringing up a post that you put up yesterday. And just yesterday, the day before, I put up an Instagram TV because I saw three women who are very successful businesswomen, a couple of them in network marketing and one of them owns her own business. And they were putting up a post basically talking to, you know, potential business builders or folks that could join their business or, you know, whatever. And they're like, look, don't worry, I'll show you how to do it without being salesy. And don't worry. And I'm like, why is this? And if we really like take a step back and understand, first of all, if you work in corporate America, I will show anybody that any position, customer service, accounting, if you're the CEO, if you're in public relations, I don't care what you do, at some point in your job, you are selling. If you're a customer service person and you're dealing with a problem, inevitably you're convincing somebody to accept your resolution of the problem. That's selling. If you're in PR, just like you said, you're convincing people who are listening to your announcement that this is what's going on behind closed doors. People who are in politics are selling a story, a pitch, a position all the time. Lobbyists, everybody's selling. I remember when I was in high school, like I wanted to go on a diet program to lose weight and I made up a whole deck. Of course, I didn't know it was a deck, but I wanted my dad to pay $600 for a diet program. And I made up this whole thing about how I do, you know, I do the lawn, I you know, clean up the garage. Here's what I'll do in exchange. And it was like a whole pitch. My dad's like, that's not really gonna happen. Funny. It didn't work, but he commended me.
Hey, there you go.
For my job.
Pride, yeah. Right.
I agree with you that sales is not a dirty word. And with the exception of people that are out there, like, you know, selling Ponzi schemes, you know, yeah, there's some shifty people, but selling is what is necessary and it is a skill everyone should have. So I firmly agree with you. And I'm glad that you
And I actually took a sales class, and I have to say, getting my MBA, that was my most favorite class I ever took. It was B2B sales. And the interesting, we read this book. If you are interested in B2B sales, you have to read, it's called, Conversations That Win the Complex Sale. It's like totally dry.
Oh, I
it's
love
a fascinating
that.
Book. Yes. Yeah. We talked about this, Kelly. We talked yes. about this before. And one of the things that I thought was so interesting about that book is they said, you know, everyone thinks that your competitors are your competitor. Your competitors are not your competitor. Mm-hmm. No decision is your competitor. 80% of deals drop because no decision has been made. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a thing to think about is, to be able to communicate in a way that garners a decision from somebody, to be able to speak so clearly that you are getting a yes or a no or some sort of response. I mean, it sounds so basic, but I find myself all the time kind of talking around points and sort of, you know, subliminally hoping that somebody will sort of pick up on what I'm saying and not just directly asking and addressing the question and addressing the problem. And I think to be able to communicate in that way is so powerful because to get people to give you answers, whatever that answer is a real skill to have.
So true. And you know, I'm going to say, I have to link that up. I think it's Mastering the Art of the Complex Sale or something. One of my other favorite books is Critical Conversations. Those are two of my most favorite business books ever. But for everybody listening, you know, I can tell you that learning about selling, the books that I have read, it's an art and it's not, you know, if more women could understand, like, no one's teaching you how to take advantage of somebody. It's about human psychology. And so when Beth was just sharing that example of like, hey, this is the God's honest truth. Half the time when I drop the ball and I go through a time period where I'm, one of my worst skills is time management. And so I can go through a phase where I've sucked at following up, and I'll follow up with somebody and we'll reconnect after a long time and they'll go, oh my God, you know, I have been meaning to follow up with you for 9 months or 9 weeks or whatever. And it's truly that they didn't choose somebody else. They forgot about it. Yeah. They were dealing with other dramas. They had a PR nightmare. And so just to what Beth said as well, women have an issue skirting around the issues. Women have an issue, quote unquote, closing. Women have an issue in personal and business being direct. And that's why we end up saying yes to things we don't want to, going out to coffee with somebody that wants to pick our brain instead of going, you know what, if you'd like to make an appointment with me, here's my rates. But we go, oh, sure, I'll meet you for coffee. And then we find a way to get out of it because we can't be direct. Being direct is one of the best gifts. And in fact, I need to make sure that that's a module in my course. I think it is. You're giving me more marketing ideas. Well, we are totally at an hour. So I want to ask you one question in closing. I knew that we would go at least an hour, and I've got to have you come back, Beth, because this was awesome.
Of course. Love to.
But for people that are listening, and then, so I have one last question, and then I want you to tell people where they can find about, you know, the summit and Wonderful and the Facebook group, and I'll link all of that up. But again, coming from an entrepreneurial perspective, for people that are listening, who are interested potentially, and they're working in corporate America and they're hearing all of this stuff going, oh God, you know, this sounds like it's not. I think a big reason that people will stay in corporate America is they say it's a predictable paycheck. I know that I've got my benefits. I know it's quote unquote stable, which makes me laugh because the number of people who have lost their jobs and then nothing is stable. That can happen at any time for any reason. Nothing is stable. No one has job stability, but people will say it's a stable paycheck. I'm not going to leave because being an entrepreneur is too unpredictable. And it sounds like it's a lot of work. My question to people who are entrepreneurs is if you, knowing that you've had past corporate experience and doing what you're doing now, I suggest that it's equal amounts of work. If you work for somebody else or you work for yourself, if you want to be successful, you're going to work hard. So you're going to work hard either way.
Yeah.
Beth, would you ever go back? If it was equal money, which path would you choose? Because what I suggest is I believe when you are pursuing your passion, your stress is so much less. You're still going to work hard.
Oh my God. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So would you ever go back and just to work for somebody else selling tires?
No. No, never in a million years. No. And and I have to say, it does depend on who you are. You know, I and this is not to shame anybody who does choose that path. And I completely right. understand, you know, my husband is the kind of guy who chooses that path, and like, he's super happy and he would hate running his own business. But then he looks at me and he's like, oh my gosh, you could never work for another person. First of all, because you're incredibly disagreeable. But second of all, because, you know, because this is your lifeblood. And I think, and I do remember, you know, working for somebody else. And I, you know, and I worked a very, very reasonable work week, you know, 40 hours a week, whatever, not including commute and that kind of thing. And yet I would come home at 5 or 6 o'clock and I would be so exhausted. I would be so tired and just drained. And now I run my own business. I work from wake to sleep, and which is not good, by the way. And I am so energized. And Monday, I love Monday because I dig into my work and I just love doing it. And it just, it gets me so amped. And I, you know, my balance feels better. I have a 2-year-old and I, you know, I take her to school. I pick her up from daycare every day. We have family time. I actually have found that my work-life balance is so much better running my own business. And that contributes so much to my own personal health. And so I think for me, this is absolutely the path. There's nothing that I can imagine myself doing.
I love your answer. I also love that you said, because, you know, I want to make sure I make that point. I firmly believe that so many women could be happier pursuing either a side hustle or you know, starting a blog or starting a business, starting a network marketing business on the side, whatever. Because I want women to be financially empowered and not in a dead end job. But that doesn't mean some people love corporate America and they're killing it and they're on several different boards. So this is finding your fit and then excelling where you are. So I want to be very clear about that. But I will also share a lot of examples simply for perspective, because the goal for me when I'm educating on health or fitness or mind or body or business is to help you guys make informed decisions on your own. And I'm going to share a quote. And for this, I'm not going to mention any names, but for the woman who told me this, she'll know who it is. And I don't think she'll mind that I shared this, but somebody that I know who used to work in the startup world and who is now working, in a JOB in corporate America, I would say JOB. And there was a time period, I've gone through a lot of change this year in 2019, where I started my own business. I started another company and I kicked ass and I got it to a successful, profitable, 6 figures, but I wasn't happy. Mm-hmm. And I hated all of my clients. And I'm like, this is not what I'm supposed to do, because I'm getting up every day and I'm hating Monday. So I was thinking about a lot of things, and I was actually thinking about going back to corporate America, because I thought, you know, this could just be a time for me to get a job, get a 6-figure paycheck, it would be so easy. Like, it would be so much less work. And so I was interviewing and it wasn't panning out. And I was sharing this with this girl, this woman. And I said, I just want to do it. I want things to be easy. I'm tired of working so hard and all the change. And she wrote me back and said, I have to tell you, I think that this conversation shows me the grass is always greener. She said, because now that I've left startup world, she goes, you have no idea how much I wish I could work from home again. I see people working from home and I'm so jealous. I have so little time with my husband. I have so little time with my kids. I don't get to see my dog and my cat. And she's like, I barely get to fit in my workout anymore. And she said, sometimes I remember getting to the end of the day, because she would work from home, and she'd say, you know, I saw 2 people today. She goes, I like the camaraderie at my office, but I absolutely can't stand my work-life balance. I have to commute 3 hours a day. And for her, it's a quandary. And she's too scared. I don't want to say scared to sound like it's a negative about her, but she's in that quandary of like, I've got the paycheck. I've got a good job. I've got respect, but I'm not happy. So it's just what I want women to do is find the place where they're happy. You're still going to work. Find the place where you can be happy with your work. Cause when you hate Monday, life sucks.
Have one life and you only have one life. So, you know, just don't do something you hate.
I mean, truly, like, let me just tell you that this is the raw truth. When I got to that point when I met Beth and Juliana, and we were sitting at dinner that night, and it was that first realization. We were going around the table talking about travel, and all of my trips were business trips. And they were talking about being in Greece and Italy and Australia. And I'm like, this one trip to Detroit was really great when they remodeled the airport. They're all looking at me like, are you serious? Like what? And it was shortly after that I started to look at my life and I'm like, I have been working this business for 5 years. I've had no social life. I don't have millions of dollars in the bank. People think I'm making all this money, but I'm paying way too many employees. I don't have, the truth is like, I got to a point where I'm like, I have nothing to show for this other than poor health, no social life, and a lot of debt. That's not a place to be. So that's why I made sharp right-hand turns. And I encourage people when it's right for you to do the same thing. Beth, tell people where they can find you on social media individually, and then where they can find out information about the WITS Women in Travel Summit and Wonderful, the Facebook group and the network.
You can find my personal blog at bethsantos.com, as well as all my social channels are at Maximum Beth. So you can find me on Instagram and Twitter. For Wonderful, it's She's Wonderful. So She's Wonderful with an A. That's on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. Our website is sheswonderful.com, or you can also find our Facebook group under Wonderful Women Who Travel. And then you've got the Women in Travel Summit, which is WITSummit.com or WITSummit on Twitter and Facebook too, I think.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was so much fun. And I know that this was a lot of juicy, good stuff for everybody who's thinking about business and evaluating, you know, their job or starting something new. So I really appreciate all of your insights. And I took copious notes and a lot of great quotes that I'm going to be sharing with people. So I'm really excited. Of course, everybody, I will link up to everything in the show notes on thekellyoshow.com. If you have any questions, of course, I encourage you to connect with Beth directly if you have questions for her. If you have questions for me and you would like to inquire about being interviewed on the show in the future, or if you're inquiring about sponsorship or advertising opportunities, you can email my assistant, and her email address is Angie@KellyAlexa.com, A-N-G-I-E. As I spell that out, I'm realizing, is there another way to spell Angie? I don't think there is. That was a little silly. So feel free to shoot us an email and let us know. But until next time, again, thanks Beth for being on the show. We'll see you next time, everyone, on The Kelly O Show.
You've reached the end of this two-part interview with Beth Santos. I hope you ladies enjoyed this chat, and I'm certain that I'll get a lot of emails following up thanking us for this episode because Beth is fantastic, isn't she? I certainly encourage all of you to connect with her, follow her, and join her wonderful network. Look into if you are a lifestyle or a travel blogger of any kind. Check out the Women in Travel Summit. We will link up to all of this, of course, in the show notes at thekellyoshow.com. Make sure you are subscribed there as well. If you have any questions for me about future episodes, if you'd like to nominate somebody that we interview for the show, or if you would like to inquire about sponsorship opportunities and advertising rates for future shows, please don't hesitate to reach out. You can use the contact me form on kellyalexa.com, or you can reach out to my assistant, Angie@kellyalexa.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. And you know I'm going to ask this because it would really help. If you're enjoying the content here on The Kelly O Show, we would so appreciate it if you would head on over to iTunes. It would take you about 3 minutes and leave a review for us. Reviews are what help every podcast get seen and heard by more people that can really benefit from this information. And we're putting a lot of time and investment into this show and planning big things. So I'd sincerely appreciate any time that you could take to give us a review. It would be certainly appreciated. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. I'll see you next time on The Kelly O Show.